Well, it is so good to see everybody today in the second of our series of reassembling as we have come back together. And I appreciate everybody being patient with us as we go through this process. And soon, we hope, this will all be over and indeed we'll be able to all come back together. I guess if you were to ask the question about who in the Old Testament stands out as a symbol of the Old Testament, there's a lot of great names that we would probably use. Abraham's a good name, David, the king, maybe Daniel in captivity. A lot of great individuals that stand out as representative of the Old Testament. Remember when Jesus took Peter, James, and John up into the Mount of Transfiguration, there were two individuals that were with Jesus. One was Moses and the other was Elijah. And that was representative of the Old Testament as we think about it from Genesis to Malachi. Moses representing the law and Elijah representing the prophets. And I guess in a larger sense, Moses really is representative of the Old Testament. Matter of fact, the law or the covenant that God had with the children of Israel is called the Law of Moses. I mean, I don't know if you thought about that, but you know, you get your name put as the moniker for this whole covenant thing that was leading up to, of course, Jesus Christ. And who himself, before he ascended to heaven, actually referred to the covenant as the Law of Moses. Virgil Michael said that the mother is indeed a gardener of God doing a veritable priestly work in the Christian care of her children. It goes without saying that Moses is one of the great people of the Old Testament. But I think it would also be fair to say that one cannot talk about the accomplishments of Moses without talking about his mother. And his mother's name was Jochebed. We don't really know a lot about her, but we actually do know a lot about her. And she is the daughter of Levi, who was the son of Jacob. And her brother, Kohath, had a son by the name of Amram. And so Jochebed married her nephew, or Amram married his aunt, whichever way you want to do that. And so there probably wasn't a lot of age disparity there. But anyway, that's kind of how she's connected. But her daddy was Levi. And Levi, of course, was the Levitical tribe, the priestly tribe that everyone come out of. And so one of the things that is key about her is that she was of a very important tribe in the nation of Israel. Actually, she's only named twice in Scripture, at least by name. The first is in Exodus chapter 6 and in verse 20, and all of these pages are, all of these notations are marked with pages in your Pew Bible if you would like to follow along with us. But she is actually only referred to later when we get to his story about the birth of Moses. She's not even named. She's just a wife of somebody. Finally, in Exodus chapter 6 and verse 20, it says that Amram took for himself Jochebed, his father's sister, as wife, and she bore him Aaron and Moses, and the years of the life of Amram were 137. And then in Numbers 26, the same account is given about where she is named there. The interesting thing about this is that Exodus and Numbers were written by Moses. And you know that at the end of the wilderness journeys that Moses sits down and writes the first five books of the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And of course, he's doing that strictly by inspiration because he wasn't there in any part of Genesis. And I just thought it was kind of interesting that Moses is writing about his own birth that he was there at, but he really didn't remember any of the events that led up to it. And that must have been kind of an interesting thing that he begins writing the book of Exodus and he's saying, wow, that's what happened when I was born and all that. I just thought that was kind of interesting. I did that. It doesn't take much to get me amused. But Moses is writing about this, and he explains it to her. But Jochebed is a woman whose children become great. She has three children. The first is Miriam, and she's going to be a gifted poetess and actually a musician. She's going to be an integral part of the nation of Israel. And then her second son, Aaron, which seems to be about 7 years later, is going to become Israel's first high priest. And it is the name of Aaron that will bear the Aaronic priesthood, that all the priests are going to come through the tribe of Levi and bear the name of Aaron. And then the third child, actually, we don't know what his name is. We are not told what his name is. but he will become one of the greatest leaders of the world. There is, again, not a lot known about the daughter of Levi, but we do know the influence that she had as a godly mother is indeed very, very important. Because you think about the world that she grew up in, or what she was born in. There's kind of an interesting discussion that we talk about that Israel was actually in bondage for 400 years in Egypt, and we'll save that for another discussion later, but in actuality, they were not literally 400 years in the land of Egypt because, for a lot of reasons, but anyway, Levi has a daughter by the name of Jochebed, who then has a son by the name of Aaron and Moses and Miriam. But the world that she grew up in was a world that was a very turbulent kind of world. In Exodus chapter 1, we begin in verse 6 when all the story of Genesis is over. Joseph has died. You remember he's the one that brought them down to Egypt, and they're doing very well when Joseph is alive. And so things are going very well. But in verse 6 of chapter 1, it says that Joseph died and all his brothers and all that generation, which includes Levi. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. And there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, "Look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and it happen in the event of war that they also join our enemies and fight against us, and so go up out of the land." So Jochebed was born, and she had children in a land that they actually outnumbered the Egyptians. I mean, it seemed to be that the Hebrews began to be multiplying, and the Pharaoh got worried about that and said, if we don't do something, they're going to take over our land. Maybe another nation's going to come, and they're going to join with them. And so what they did is that they subjugated these Hebrews, and they made them taskmasters there in verse 11 to afflict them with their burdens. And they built a lot of the cities, which is kind of interesting that you look at the ruins of Egypt today, and there's a lot of it that's got the thumbprints of the Hebrews all over it because they're the ones that built it. Two cities are named there, Pithom and Ramesses. And it says in verse 12, the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew, and they were in dread of the children of Israel. I mean, these people began to really be a force here, and they began to be in dread of them. And so the Egyptians, verse 13, made the children of Israel serve with rigor. They made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and brick and in all manner of service in the field, and all their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. So this is the kind of world that Jochebed got married in, the kind of world that she brought children into, a very harsh, very difficult world. They were slaves, basically, and it got to be worse and worse and worse, and the Pharaoh got to be a lot more worried about things, and it just got to be a little out of hand in what was kind of going on here. And so the king of Egypt said, well, I've got to do something about this. And so there were a couple of midwives. They had a show called the Midwives, called the Hebrew Midwives. And so the Pharaoh called the midwives in, and he said to them, okay, here's what you need to do. Those Hebrews are multiplying entirely too much. So this is the deal. Whenever you're delivering the child, and if it's going to be a boy, what we want you to do is to kill it. Because there's too many of these that are multiplying, and so that's your task. And so he brings them in privately and tells the midwives that when you're doing that, if you see that it's a son, kill him, but if it's a daughter, he shall live. Well, that's kind of a crazy thing. I mean, the king of Egypt comes and says, this is what you're going to do. Well, the Hebrew midwives feared God more than they feared the king of Egypt. And they didn't do it. And so they went about their business, and every time a male child was born, they slapped it on the behind and let it rip, and they didn't kill it. And so that was a blessing, and so that didn't really work. And so Pharaoh calls into the midwives and asked them why they didn't do this, and so they gave this reason in verse 19. The midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they're lively and give birth before the midwives come to them. And so God dealt kindly with them. I think it's interesting. I think it's in the providence of God that Pharaoh didn't kill these women. I think they were protected by God as to why they didn't, because they just blatantly disobeyed, and he knew that they disobeyed his will. And so that just didn't seem to be working out. And so they began to multiply a lot more. Well, Pharaoh put it up another notch.
Instead of privately going to these Hebrew midwives and saying, you will kill the child, now he has taken the law to the extreme that it is a law of the land. In verse 22, Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying that every son who was born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. Infanticide is a very terrible thing when you kill babies and children like this. But the thing that was really harsh about this is that he tried to get them to do it privately, but now he made it a public thing. And it was the law of the land. If a child is born and it is a boy, they are to be thrown into the Nile River. And of course, in most places of the Nile River, like in Florida, you got those critters. Although we have alligators, they have crocodiles. You tell the difference in the teeth. Anyway, that was the law of the land, and it was public. Everybody knew it. It was just that was what everybody was supposed to do. And it seems incredible that the king, the Pharaoh, would just make this into a proclamation, because he became basically the murderer of all the male children that were born in Egypt of the Hebrews. And so that's the kind of world. You think you and I got it bad. I mean, I know it's been kind of crazy with this virus thing. Can you imagine living in a world that you are pregnant with a child and you don't know what's going to be happening? Because if it's a boy, you know, it's going to be kind of bad. And that actually happened, of course. I would note that, of course, this happened after Miriam and Aaron were born. There's about 3 years difference between Aaron and Moses. And so sometime after the birth of Aaron, Pharaoh made this law that the children were to be killed. And so now she's pregnant again. It's an exciting time. They didn't have instruments back there to say, boy, girl, I know. Carrying them low, it's got to be a boy. No, your face look, it's got to be, you know, whatever. They didn't have, and so you didn't know. And so she's pregnant. She's excited about this, but she is fearful because she's living in a world where the law of the land says if a boy is born, he's got to be killed. And guess what? She had a boy. What incredible joy to see the firstborn, but the child to be born, and it's like, wow, look, and oh no, it's a boy. I mean, it's an amazing conflict there. She's excited because there's a boy that's born. Chapter 2 and verse 1, a man of the house of Levi went and took as his wife the daughter of Levi. The woman conceived a poor son. Wow. I mean, her faith was really challenged here. Because what if somebody tells somebody else? And they say, oh, did you hear that Jochebed had a boy? Well, is he not in the river? Well, no. And again, that's kind of a different kind of a world that we live in. There are people that have lived in worlds and still today is that your neighbors will turn you in. I mean, there are people that will tell on you if you're doing things. And that's a terrible world to live in. And so here she is to be rejoicing with husband and with her two children, and look down and here's a boy. I mean, what faith that must have taken on her part. I mean, what's a mother to do? Well, we find in Exodus 2 and verse 2 that she did exactly what she needed to do. She trusted God. So the woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him for 3 months. I had the same problem when I was born. They hid me. Thought I was talking about beautiful. You think about what she decided to do. Because obviously, it's a little hard to, obviously she's walking around, she's pregnant, and, did she hide herself for 9 months when nobody knew she was pregnant? I mean, I don't know. But they at least got 3 months that they went through everything that she could do. She saw that Moses was a goodly child, a fine child. It seems to be in the language of him being a beautiful child, even by what Stephen says in Acts 7, is that she looked at him and just realized that this is a special child. And maybe that could have been the providential care of God, of course, there included. But she looked at Moses and realized that this was a special child. And so no one in their right mind was going to go out and destroy this child. And again, you kind of wonder, well, did that ever happen? We don't know. I don't know if it happened that, some Hebrew women had some children and they got thrown into the river. We don't know. But, how this must have been an anxious 3 months. I mean, have you ever tried to keep a one-month-old quiet or a two-month-old quiet? I don't know what I'm saying before it's heard. I mean, it's just kind of you're just sort of scared of what's going to happen. And I mean, how long can you keep a baby quiet? And when she could no longer hide him, what is she going to do? Well, she came up with a plan because, first of all, her decision not to kill the child was not only her maternal love and paternal love, but her trust in God. But you know, little babies grow up and they get bigger. And it's like, when were you born? What's she going to do next? Well, she continued to trust in God, because then she decided that the next thing she was going to do was to let God's will be done. In Exodus 2 and in verse 3, when she could no longer hide him, obviously, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. 3-month-old baby, can you imagine? Putting in the reeds, and it seems to be, in particularly where, as we see the daughter of Pharaoh's coming, in this place of the Nile, actually, there were not a lot of crocodiles. And people would bathe, and they would, you know, do things there, and they weren't necessarily afraid of being eaten or anything. And so this part of the land was there. But I mean, you know, what kind of faith does it take for a mother to take her 3-month-old baby, put it in an ark of, and put it in the river and just leave it there? Now, she's going to tell Miriam, you know, to go and watch over, but that takes a lot of faith. And I think that we know why she did exactly what she did, because she put him in the reeds by the river. His sister stood far off to know what would be done to him. And then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river. Do you think that was by accident? No. I mean, we don't know exactly, but I suspect that Jochebed knew exactly what she was doing. She knew that the princess bathed there, and maybe she was begging on the maternal instincts of a woman to see this this Hebrew child and maybe take compassion on it. The daughter of Pharaoh, verse 5, comes to bathe at the river. Her maidens walked along the riverside, and when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And so the maid brought it up. She opened it up, and she saw the child, and the baby was crying. Makes sense. And she had compassion on him and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. And the reason she knew that is because he was circumcised. And so she knew that obviously this was not an Egyptian child, because the law of the land did not apply to the Egyptians. It was only to the Hebrews. And so indeed, not only the providence of God, but also the maternal instincts of another woman. And so she said, one of the Hebrews' children. And so the thing about Jochebed was that she took an action. She did something that would be a great amount of faith. And she believed in the power of God. She believed in his providence. She didn't know how this was going to work out. She didn't know what was going to happen to the child, but she believed in God's power. And indeed, it came about because he was saved by this event. And she did what she had to do. I think there's a great story about faith and works here, because then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you? Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. So the maiden went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages. And so the woman took the child and nursed him. I mean, how wonderful is that? I don't know if Pharaoh's daughter ever figured out the fact that that's his mother, but it still worked out for the providence of God that now Jochebed is able to raise this child. I don't know what happened to the law, but this child was rescued out of the river, and Pharaoh's daughter gives the baby to this woman to take care of. And here's the thing I don't understand. She gets paid to raise that boy. When did we ever get paid to raise our children? I mean, really? Oh, we did when we got grandchildren. That's right. Okay. I got that boy. But, I mean, she even gets, you know, paid. And so she's protected now. You imagine the first day, you know, that day when she brings Moses back home. I mean, did they kill the fatted calf or what? You know, honey, Moses, or the baby's back home, and everything's okay. And, you know, he's not going to die. We don't have to hide him anymore or anything like that. I mean, it's such an incredible story. All of this was according to the divine pattern of God's will. It's a wonderful thing. And you know why? Because Jochebed's faith in God to do the impossible. The only thing she knew, we got to do something about this child. And there was. She believed in the power of God. She let God's power work in her life. She trusted in the power of God. She trusted in the will of God. She trusted that God was going to make all this come about, because she was a woman of great faith. And faith grew in the heart of the young boy because he was raised by a godly woman. Now again, we're not taking away from the faith of Moses, but I'm going to tell you, the faith of Moses came from this woman, because she had him for the first few years. And she taught him about God. She instilled in him the love of God and the promises of God. And I think the story of Moses is clearly seen by those formative years. In the first 5 years of life, it is said that the child's brain develops more and faster than at any other time in the life. A child's early experiences, his relationships, and the things he sees and hears and touches and smells and tastes stimulate his brain, creating millions of connections. This is when the foundations of learning, health, and behavior throughout life are laid down. Those first 5 years, don't know exactly how long Moses was there, but she had him for those first years. I always remembered back from school, Vladimir Lenin said, "If you give me your son for 4 years, I will teach him that he will never change." I mean, it's the formative years. And a lot of who and what we are has a lot of basis in those early years. And you think about Moses, and Jochebed understood the limited time she had with Moses would be formed in his life. She wasn't going to wait for him to be a teenager. She wasn't going to wait for him to graduate from high school. She was going to do it right then when he was 1 year old, when he was 2 years old. And she embedded in him, she infused in him a love of God and the principles and the things that were important. Again, the providence of God. The providence of God was there. Now, what's kind of interesting about all this is that when he came of age, verse 9, the woman took the child and nursed him. In verse 10, the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And so she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of water." What is very interesting about Moses is that we don't know his real name. Because obviously Jochebed and Amram gave him some kind of a name. Moses is an Egyptian name. He is known by his Egyptian name. And I think that there's a great providential pattern that's on all that, because when we talk about Moses, we're talking about everything having to do with Egypt. And there's always been a connection between Egypt and the children of Israel. And so every reference to Moses reflects the story of Egypt, because she was named of Pharaoh's daughter. So he was given the name Moses, to whom we know him. And it is also important to note that Moses, go over to the New Testament in the book of Acts in the 7th chapter. It is here that Stephen gives a history of Israel. And he says some interesting things about Moses. In Acts chapter 7 and verse 22, talking about Moses, and he told the story how that Moses was born. He was well-pleasing to God. He was brought up to his father's house for 3 months. But when he was set out, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and brought him up as his own son. Verse 22, and Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and deeds. He was a highly educated man. When he was in Egypt, he was a highly educated man. Now, we're not going to talk about it, but you remember when Moses came to the burning bush and God said, "Go to Egypt," and Moses said, "I can't talk, I can't say anything." What happened to this guy? Known to the man in Egypt that was a well-versed, well-learned man, and Stephen says that he was mighty in words and deed. Well, after 40 years of tending sheep, that'll take it out of him. But he had the education of every, so he had privilege, he had honor, he had everything that was on a golden platter for him. Everything was given to him, and he was a very learned pupil. But he was also, and these are my words only, he was a devout Hebrew with a mistaken identity about himself. He was a little misguided, because he knew he was a Hebrew. He knew that he was a son of Jochebed and Amram. He knew the plight of the history of Israel. He knew why they were there. He knew about Abraham. He knew about Adam and Eve. He knew about all the stories of the Bible. But the problem is, he had a little kind of a misguided view of things, which is sort of good and bad, because it tells us in Acts chapter 7 and verse 23, Stephen says that when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel, and seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed and struck down the Egyptian. He killed him and buried him in the sand. And he came back the next day, and for he supposed, verse 25, that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. But they did not understand. And the next day he appeared to two of them as they were fighting and tried to reconcile them, saying, "Men, you are brethren. Why do you wrong one another?" But he who did his neighbor wrong pushed him away, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you did the Egyptian yesterday?" Whoops. All we're saying is that Moses thought, and this says a lot about his learning, I think, and teaching, is that Jochebed taught him about the will of God in his life. And he was mistaken because he thought he was going to be the great deliverer. And you notice what Stephen says here is that he thought that it was going to be by his hand that he was going to be delivered. I'll give you a sidebar. You know, I think the reason, of course, that Moses was cast out and it was 40 years before he was coming back. He was 80 years old when he led the children of Israel out of Egypt. You know why? Because Moses needed to get pride out of his heart. And it took 40 years. Because the man who came back at the age of 80 was not the man who left at 40. Because he thought, hey, I'm here to deliver you people. What do you want? And God said, no. And so when Moses comes back at the age of 80, he's saying to God, I can't do anything and I'm not going to. And he became a great leader. But what we find, I think, is all of this is clearly from the teaching of Jochebed, the things that she was able to teach him. Now, we don't know what happened after that. Was she able to visit him? I mean, did he come for little visits, you know, in his little chariot and see his mom and dad? Probably so. And it's likely that she died maybe during this time. We don't know. Maybe she died after he left. But anyway, the thing about it is that we look at her life and we see that it's truly an amazing story of faith. And she had just a small window of opportunity to be with her son. But what made Jochebed a godly woman was that she was one who truly believed in the power of God in her life. She was a woman of faith. She was a woman of deep devotion. And as we read in Hebrews chapter 11, we really find more out in the New Testament than we do the Old Testament about Jochebed, because the Hebrew writer tells us in the 11th chapter in verse 23 that by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents. Okay, we talked about that. It's because they saw he was a beautiful child, noticed that he was a special child. But here's the key in the end of verse 23. They were not afraid of the king's command. I mean, think about that. You're living in a time when the law of the land is you give birth to a son, he dies. They were not afraid of the king. She was not going to allow the law of the land to cause her to lose her faith in what God's plan was. I mean, it's easy to lose sight of what seed was planted in Moses. I mean, what was embedded in him? Because she had that faith in her. And what happened is it became resident in Moses. Verse 24. Amram and Jochebed were refused to follow the king's command. Well, what did that do for Moses? Well, when Moses, when he became of age, number one, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Wait a minute. You're giving all that up? Power, prestige, and honor, and all that. You realize what it would mean to be the son or called the son of Pharaoh's daughter? And that, I mean, you would be getting everything. But he said, I'm going to give all that up. It's not important to me. And he was choosing rather to suffer affliction, to esteem suffering with his people was more valuable than all the fun stuff that he was having and all the things that he was doing. And to forsake Egypt, he didn't fear the wrath of the king. To keep the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood and the night of death and to take the people. Do you know why Moses did all those things? Because of Jochebed. She taught him to trust in God because that's what she did. I mean, again, we're not taking away from the faith of Moses. But she was not afraid of the king's command. David McClister said that her actions illustrate further the kind of faith that ultimately trusts that God's power will overcome all threats against the faithful as well as the boldness and courage that such faith begets. What happened with Jochebed was that she was a great woman of faith because she believed in God as her salvation. She lived in perilous times. She lived in a terrible time when they were killing babies. Well, that was the law of the land. But she put her trust in God. Nothing was going to sway her from trusting in God. And if faith does not reside in the mother, it will be hard to instill in the child. The reason that it was resident in Moses is because it was in Jochebed. Many times the reason that it is not in a child is because it was not in the mother or the father to begin with. You can't give children what you don't have. But it was in Jochebed. I mean, that kind of deep and devoted kind of faith. And she was a woman who trusted in the will of God for her life. I mean, you kind of wonder, you know, how's everything going to work out? We know because we've got the end of the story. But when they hid the child for 3 months, what are you going to do? I don't know. Put him in the ark. What are you going to do? I don't know. But they trusted in the will of God. They believed that God's will was going to be accomplished. And then they allowed even the impossible to be done. and a woman who saw her role as a mother, as the teacher of her children, the only thing that was important in life. She gave Moses and Aaron and Miriam, she gave them one thing that they would need above all other things. She gave them God. And look how it served them. I mean, these three people became three of the great people of the nation of Israel. She taught Moses to look at Pharaoh's world and then look at God's world and see the comparison. And Moses gave the riches of Egypt up because he loved God. Why would he walk away from all of that stuff? Because he loved God more. Jochebed did not teach him to love the world. She taught him to love God. And then finally, she was a woman who had three children. I mean, they were failed people. I mean, you know, Miriam and Aaron had some problems. Moses had some problems. But they became three great names in the nation of Israel because they had a great mom. They had a great lady for a mother. If there was a contest for Mother of the Year, what qualifications would you think pertinent to her selection? Mother of the Year. That's actually a good movie. Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, I think. But anyway, that's a commercial. Doesn't cost you a nickel. What would it be to qualify to be the mother of the year? Worldly acclaim? Excelling in education? Maybe accomplishing some great things in science or whatever it may be? Well, God describes the true character of the godly woman as we talk about Mother's Day today. In the latter part of Proverbs 21, which interestingly enough was told the king by his mother, God says this is what really qualifies the mother that is pleasing in his sight. In Proverbs 31, verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she should be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and let her own works praise her in the gates. Here's a woman whose children rise up and call her blessed, whose honor is given to her by her husband. The fact that she excels in all the things, but she excels not because of the outward beauty, not because of the external things of the deceitfulness of charm and the beauty and all the things that are trappings of the world that people may want to give as qualifications for motherhood or whatever. Motherhood is found in the woman who fears the Lord. That's what he says. Motherhood only happens once. And there are no second chances. Jochebed had a small window of time that she had to teach and to train Moses. What if she hadn't have done that? How would Moses have turned out? Motherhood is defined by how a woman stands before God. And she stood before God in a perilous time and believed in his will and trusted in him. And we need to have mothers much like Eunice, much like the mother and grandmother of Timothy, who was Lois and Eunice, when Paul commended them in his epistle, that I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you also. He mentions the word here, genuine faith, that dwells there. That's what Jochebed had. Jochebed had genuine faith. It was dwelling in her, and she passed that on to her son. She passed that on to her daughter. She passed it on to you and me. That's what motherhood is about. And we need to be in the example of Amram and Jochebed for Mother's Day to think about Jochebed and the kind of son that she raised and how he changed the world and how we can change the world. Faith must dwell in our hearts. Where's your faith this morning? I trust that your faith is in Jesus Christ, that you will answer the call of salvation if you're not a Christian to be his. Believe in him. Trust in him. And yet being a child of God, let's live holy before him. Consider these things as together we stand as we sing.